Welcome to Radar Contact,
the air traffic management podcast by Fox ATM.
Welcome to one more episode of Radar Contact, our ATM podcast. And today I'm very appreciating the effort that my guest is doing because we are recording that episode at special times. For me in Frankfurt, it's 7 p.m. And for Sharon Cook, CEO of Airways International on the other side, it's 7 a.m. because Sharon is in New Zealand. So Sharon, thank you so much for joining us so early for you and welcome to Radar Contact. So can you please just introduce yourself rapidly so our listeners know who you are?
Good morning, good evening, Vincent. Yes, my name is Sharon Cook. I'm the CEO of Airways International, and our company is based in New Zealand, so hence the different time zone from Europe.
Yeah. So thank you very much for joining so early. I know it's not easy. So Airways International is the commercial branch or commercial subsidiary of Airways New Zealand, the ANSP in New Zealand. So can you explain the role of Airways International with respect to the ANSP and how the relationship between the two organizations is working?
Yes, look, that's correct, Vincent. And the role of Airways International is to provide services to our parent company, Airways New Zealand, but also to commercialize our IP that have been built up over a number of years. The services that are outsourced to Airways are typically those that benefit from the economies of scale, but by also providing similar services to other ANSPs. So training's a really good example of that. Airways New Zealand is therefore a major and very important customer of Airways International. And each year they set out their service requirements. We respond with a proposal on how that will be delivered, including pricing. We then set up a service level agreement, and we have KPIs that we're expected to deliver. The relationship works really well. They are assured of competitive pricing and leading edge products as a result of a larger customer base, which, you know, enables us to do some research and development, and also contributing to our wider overheads.
So when a customer comes to Airways International, do you serve them with your own staff and material and capabilities? Or do you also sometimes rely on staff from Airways, the ANSP?
Yes, we do both. So typically we have a lot of capability that sits within Airways International, and particularly around the services that we provide to Airways. You know, training, procedure design, things like that. But also, with our consultancy services, we reach into the parent company and we access the subject matter experts from there.
Okay, thank you for that. You mentioned a few services already, like procedural design and training. Can we go across the whole panel of products and service you offer and bring to the market?
Sure. So look, Airways International is a technology-focused company. Primarily, and we have a range of products and services in our portfolio. So yes, I mentioned training, and the recent addition to that being ARCO, our virtual academy. We also have a suite of digital products, and what we have in there is we have our total control, surveillance and tower simulators. We also have SureSelect, which is ATC recruitment and selection software. The FAA and Air Services Australia are our biggest customers in regards to that. And then we also have AirShare, which is our UAS traffic management system. So then in addition, the next portfolio is called Aeropath, and that's where we have our AIM, Aeronautical Information Suite of products, and Procedure Design Team. So again, we provide those services for Airways through there, but also a lot of other ANSPs around the world or airports and the like. Finally, I mentioned we do consultancy. So that sits in aviation services. We work with a lot of military and civil aviation companies, predominantly in the Asia and Pacific region. And a lot of work in the Pacific Islands, for example. So that's kind of the suite of products and services that sits within Airways International.
Very nice. Thank you. What do you think is making Airways International different from other providers? One of the organizations I'm thinking of right now is, for example, DFS Aviation Services that is also backed up or backed on an ANSP. What would be the really differentiators of Airways International compared to others?
I guess I would think that it's probably a suite of like digital products and services. Unlike, I guess, DFS, NATS, some of the others, which are probably primarily consultancy with their subject matter experts around air navigation services, I think the difference with us is that we have all our digital products and services. And I think we're recognised as training specialists as well. So, you know, Total Control, Sure Select, AirShare. I think that's probably our point of difference.
Very nice. So it means you get some of the products from Airways and you can further develop them? Or are some of the products purely developed by Airways International for the market without regarding the need of your own home ANSP?
Generally, we're developing products and services for our own ANSP, Airways, in the first instance. And then we're selling, providing those to others as well, with the rationale being if Airways has a problem to be solved in this area, other ANSPs are likely to as well. So
very interesting. One of the things you mentioned in the area of training is Airways Knowledge Online, or AKO, or ACO for short, which is explained on the website as being a digital learning community. How can our listener better understand what ACO is? How should them imagine that? Is that for distance learning? Is it something where you learn by yourself? Or are there trainers? Is that interactive? How is the whole ACO things running?
So I'd say yes to all of that. It's all of those things. And look, I think what we've seen is online remote digital learning has just evolved more in the last 2 years than probably in the previous 10 years because of COVID. We've had that capability for quite a long time. COVID has meant that the industry is a bit more receptive to that. But look, so what is ARCO, our virtual academy? We basically have three different delivery options within ARCO. So the first one we call it ARCO Classroom, and that is an instructor-led course. People train as a cohort. They're in a virtual environment, and we replicate the face-to-face experience through a virtual classroom. So they turn up to class at a time. The instructor's leading them through stuff. We've established an immersive learning studio to create that face-to-face situation as much as we can. And we do a lot of courses through that format. The second delivery model is called ARCO Flexi. So basically all the content and the resources, You can manage your own learning at a time and a pace that suits you, but it's enabled. We have a tutor to support the learner. So it's more check-ins with the tutor, assisting, helping. And so, you know, slightly different option like that. And then the third one is we have, our earbooks, which they are, the best way to describe those is interactive dynamic textbooks. The contents all within those, people just work through them on their own. There's quizzes and tests in them. We have dashboards where we can see how long people have engaged, how well they're doing in the tests. And we use those either to support the other courses or, you know, in Airways' case, refresher training, compliance training, you know, all our safety courses and everything are sitting in those. And as an organisation, we have assurance that people have completed the training that they need to and how well they did and that. So that's kind of the three different parts of ARCO and how it works.
What kind of contents or trainings do you deliver? Because you mentioned compliance, for example. I guess all operational theoretical training is available via ARCO. But can you also offer technical training, things for ATSEPs, for technicians, for engineers, or is it purely operational?
No, we do both.
We're doing everything at the moment. So we do our ab initio training through there. 051 online, which is, you know, the theoretical component, you can do that through ARCO Classroom, which a lot of people do, or you can do it completely. The whole course is in eBooks. You can do it completely independently. And then we can set up, we've developed an online assessment platform as well. And then you can come and do the online assessment and we can authenticate that you're the learner with the video cameras on your computer. We can see you're the person sitting there doing the test and all of that. We're building online capability for tower simulation and surveillance simulation courses because we can deliver our sims remotely now as well. But also ATSEP, ops courses, you know, watch supervisor and instructor courses, all of that through the platform now. Yeah.
It sounds like you are changing the training and learning industry quite a lot. And I wanted to ask you what's the feedback from the users that use ACO. As you mentioned, COVID certainly played a role into that, but now everybody is used to work at home. So what kind of feedback do you get from the trainees and from the trainers?
Yeah, it's really interesting, Vincent. I anticipated that we might get some pushback.
Definitely from maybe some of our more experienced controllers. That wasn't the case. I guess, you know, to start with, we had some technical challenges that we needed to overcome. We had to, our instructors had to learn to deliver in a virtual online environment. But we have just got better and better and better at that over time. And I think, our virtual classroom now, once you're in there and you're fully immersed, people are saying, wow, it doesn't really feel much difference, right? There's interaction. People can see each other. You know, we've got an interactive whiteboard. So the instructor's writing up on the whiteboard. And so the feedback's been generally good. There's definitely an adjustment period. I would never say that you would completely replace it. There's a huge social interaction part of training. And I think post-COVID, we'll just be a bit more blended, you know. It'll be to fit the situation. But we're doing okay at the moment, yeah.
That sounds really nice. Congratulations on that. Now I have to ask you something, Sharon, that is sounding almost like magic to me. You are operating out of New Zealand. You mentioned Air Services Australia is one of your customers. You also completed projects in Malaysia recently. But you also had a large simulator project with Norway. And, you know, I'm from Switzerland myself, and at school they told us, oh, New Zealand, these are the islands exactly at the opposite side of the earth. That's the farthest you can go. I can only imagine the logistics of delivering a project, including systems delivery, systems configuration, training, out of the other side of the world with 12 hours time difference. Travel is extremely complicated. I mean, it probably gets close to 2 days to travel. When you can travel and COVID made it even harder. What is the trick? How can you manage such a project with basically working on from the other side of the world?
Yes. So, Vincent, you're referring to the Avanor ANS simulation project, and actually our team were up in Norway just before COVID broke out in March 2020, you know, as part of a tender process for that work. And yeah, we thought, wow, this is going to be problematic and challenging for us. As part of that process, we sat down and we wrote a COVID mitigation strategy. We said, how could we do this if we can't travel? And, I did have to look my team in the eye and say, can we actually do this? Like, can we deliver 16 simulators from the other side of the world without traveling? Because previously we would have people in country. We would be there training their people. We'd buy the hardware. We'd take it in. We'd install it. And anyway, they looked at me and said, we can do it. And we did. And we used our ARCO Virtual Academy. So we made eBooks, with interactive video guides on how to install the equipment. Our people worked very unsociable hours during that, that contract. I mean, we had people working through the night, obviously, supporting Avanor. I think, you know, look, the key to the success was we were in it together. They were fantastic. Like, their tech people had to do the installation of the SIMs, you know, guided by our people. Using the tech that we've got here today, right, where you can talk to each other, we had cameras, we were putting stuff through our virtual academy. We did remote FAT and SAT testing. But I think when there's a willingness on both sides and you both want to get a successful outcome, Avanor were under a really tight time pressure. We made it happen and we made it work. It's absolutely changed the way we work now, because that was a big project. We know we can do it. And Malaysia came after Avanor. That was partially underway when COVID hit. So we just looked back and said, look, we can do this remotely. We can finish the implementation of this product. We're doing another one remotely in Puerto Rico at the moment. So, yeah, we can do it without needing to travel anymore. We will still travel in the future. We need to connect with our customers. We need to engage with our colleagues. But as you know, New Zealand's been locked down. We haven't been able to travel. So
yeah, that's really impressive. Congratulations on that. And I loved to meet you in Madrid last year. And I'd love to come to visit Airways once in New Zealand. But it's true, COVID changed a lot of things. And do you think it also changed the perspective of the customers? Are they less afraid to work with someone that is so far away? Do you feel a change there?
Oh, I hope so. That the distance is not seen as the barrier that it has been previously. That's always been something that we've battled with, that the perception that we're a long way away, we're in a different time zone. You know, we provide a 24/7 help desk, you know. It's what we do. We support our international customers and we also support local. I mean, I guess the flip side, we have had groups and people come out to New Zealand because they see it as an attractive destination, and they kind of think, oh, we'll come and do some training in New Zealand or it'd be nice to have a look around while we're there. So I can certainly recommend that as well. It is a nice part of the world if you want to visit.
I have to come to visit you once, be it on business or on a private trip. That's definitely on my bucket list.
You've been very welcome.
But I'm really happy to hear that you have seen some positive aspects from the crisis and that the mindsets of users and customers worldwide are changing. Now to close up that discussion, I'd like to ask you our typical signature question. What evolution do you see in the ATM markets in the next 5 years, but also in the next 50 years to push the game a bit more and open doors to more fantasies?
That's a good question. Thinking about that, look, over the next 5 years, I think we'll see more convergence of technologies, particularly cloud-based. And you know, we are going to see the emergence of new entrants into the market as well, right? I don't think anybody would say we're not going to have UAVs, air taxis, electric aircraft of the like. I mean, I think that's happening, and we'll start to see that rolling out in the next 5 years. I also think we're going to see changes in the airspace as we know it. I think the lines are going to be blurred between controlled and uncontrolled. I think we're going to have new classifications. I think we're starting to see those already. You know, as our aviation ecosystem emerges and evolves, I think the other thing is, I think cybersecurity and sustainability of aviation are going to feature heavily in the next 5 years as well. In terms of the next 50 years, wow. That's big picture thinking, isn't it? I was trying to, take myself out and say, well, what do I think it will look like? Look, we already have the capability to self-separate aircraft and pilotless aircraft, right? So I'd expect that to be mainstream by then. I think onboard tech will be managing all aspects of flight. I think there'll be new advanced air mobility entrants, potentially supersonic, electric, and possibly hydrogen-powered aircraft. I think the airspace is going to be pretty crowded. I don't think ANSPs will exist like they do today. I think there will be consolidation and transformation of the industry. I kind of think there would be some kind of provision still in place around airspace services. I think the remit might be a bit wider though. You know, I'm kind of thinking access to urban laneways. I think, you know, commercialization in a way, controlled airspace restrictions, data information services, access to satellite services, protecting sovereign rights. I can't see countries just, oh, we're not going to be involved in this anymore. So I think there'll be something in some shape or form. Look, I could be totally off beam. I'm just hoping I'm still around to witness it and see what it all looks like.
Well, I guess in 50 years we will both be retired, but it would be nice at least to witness and see a bit of that and see what is coming. Sharon, that was very interesting to hear your perspective from the other side of the world. Very nice of you to join us so early for you. So I wish you a nice start of your day now. Thank you very much for being our guest.
Thank you very much, Vincent. And it was lovely chatting with you this morning.
This was Radar Contact.
Visit foxatm.com or your favorite podcast platform for more.